Before we begin this episode of the Debated Podcast, I think it's worth addressing what has happened today and yesterday in Ukraine. The people of Ukraine have been invaded by one of the worst dictators that Europe has seen in many decades. If you feel that you need to support the people of Ukraine, then I would suggest that you send donations to the following causes and charities: Come Back Alive, Global Giving, the International Committee of the Red Cross, Nova Ukraine, Revived Soldiers Ukraine, Save the Children, Sunflowers of Peace, Support Hospitals in Ukraine, the Kiev Independent, Ukraine Humanitarian Fund, United Help Ukraine, and Voices of Children. All of these are important organisations, and your money will help the people of Ukraine fight one of the most pernicious and vile dictators that we have ever seen. On with the episode.
Dude, we are going to energise the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
The independence case is a powerful one.
Another future is possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Adam Richardson from Direct Democracy UK. Their website is directdemocracyuk.org. Welcome to the podcast, Adam.
Hi, Will. Good to talk to you today.
It's great to have you on, Adam. So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what is the purpose behind Direct Democracy UK?
Well, Direct Democracy UK is a platform party, or maybe a hybrid party, as some people would refer to it as. We are not a single issue party like, say, the Brexit party was, but really we are just hoping to establish an awareness of alternative systems of democracy, ones that I believe are much needed in this country, and that systems of democracy that would bring much greater autonomy and freedom of choice to the citizens of the UK.
Mm-hmm. So when you say obviously greater autonomy and freedom of choice, what exactly do you specifically mean by greater autonomy or freedom of choice?
Sure. So the UK's current system of politics is a parliamentary monarchy with representative democracy, the representatives being MPs. And unfortunately, it has failed. If it fails us every day, there are so many points of failure, from the disgusting displays at PMQs to the corruption of politics by moneyed lobbyists, some of them Russian. And it is just ill-equipped to respond to the pressing needs of ordinary citizens in digging us out of the hole that 40 years of neoliberalism has got us into. It's an alternative system of politics, government, and lawmaking. It's not a failed ideology from the past. It would be a paradigm shift for the institutions and citizens of the UK, and I think it would be a positive one, because, as I say, it would bring more democracy to citizens, not less. I think anyone engaging in a good faith argument would have to agree that that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the actual change that this would make to the lives of ordinary people in the UK, I mean, can you just give us a picture of what it would be like if the change that you're obviously advocating for were made to the British political system?
Sure. Well, we would seek to upgrade the political system in the UK to one that resembles the Swiss model of direct democracy. Mm-hmm. Now, that is the most trusted system of democracy in the world. If I can just go on a sidetrack about the Swiss model.
Yes, of course.
So direct democracy is not purely theoretical. It's been the system of government in Switzerland for decades. The Swiss can trace it back to the 1840s. So despite its outstanding natural beauty, Switzerland is not a utopia. It has many of the problems that small European nations do. However, in a survey of the 40 rich nations, the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, found that on average, 42% of people express confidence in government. But in Switzerland, which came first, the rate was 75%. And in the 7 years since the previous survey, confidence levels have risen there by 12 points, while they have fallen by an average of 3% elsewhere. Now, George Monbiot writes in Out of the Wreckage, quote, "What possible reason might Swiss citizens have to vest so much confidence in their public institutions? It is simple. To a greater extent than the people of any other nation, they exercise control over their institutions. The great constitutional question, where should sovereignty reside, in parliament or the people, has been decisively resolved in favor of the people. The overall effect is to encourage public engagement with politics, high levels of political information, and reasoned debate. Still more important is the sense of political ownership the system fosters. People perceive that government belongs to them." So that is just an idea of the current Swiss model that I think the UK could benefit in moving towards. Now, specifically, what is different about the Swiss model is that the people are able to directly influence lawmaking. Mm-hmm. That's done in a variety of mechanisms, but the one that's most understandable is referendums. The people of Switzerland can vote on up to four occasions annually on up to 15 different issues that could lead to changes in Swiss law. You can vote at the ballot box, by post, or even vote online in some of the Swiss cantons. Mm-hmm. That's their name for states. So since 1990, referendums have been held on such issues as building nuclear power stations and railways, controlling immigration, abolishing the army, shortening working hours, and opening up electricity markets. So back to Direct Democracy UK, we would seek to implement a gradual transition to a model that more closely resembled the Swiss model of direct democracy. Mm-hmm. So an early focus would be to institute an annual referendum day. And on that day, eligible voters can vote on five issues of law that current lawmakers, for reasons I hope we go on to discuss, mm-hmm. are unwilling to address. So issues like legalized euthanasia, decriminalizing cannabis, bringing utility companies into public ownership, nationalizing rail services, and yes, controlling immigration.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm sort of interested in related to the website is that you say quite explicitly on the website that you would like to get rid of MPs completely, to get rid of members of the House of Commons and replace the UK's current system with one, as you mentioned, of direct democracy. But of course, in Switzerland, they do still have elected representatives and they do still have politicians. So what you're proposing is going somewhat further than the Swiss system, isn't it?
It is, yes. I think the Swiss model is technically semi-direct democracy. Mm-hmm. Switzerland is a on the surface, it's a typical bicameral federal state with the president as a head of state. Mm-hmm. Bicameral is the use of a upper and a lower house for lawmaking. However, as outlined in the Swiss constitution, sovereignty resides with the people who exercise supreme political power. And that constitutional right plays out in their form of direct democracy. Swiss model still involves representatives of democracy. What we are interested in at Direct Democracy UK is a gradual change. Mm-hmm. We're not seeking revolutionary change. We would like to see a transition to the Swiss model and annual referendums on issues that people really care passionately about but are mm-hmm. unable to do anything about via their current representatives, the MPs in this country. So I would hope to see that instigated in my lifetime. And then I think as technology evolves and society evolves, I would hope that we would move to a position where society would accept that MPs were no longer necessary, that these representatives of democracy, these representatives of the people, have unfortunately been completely captured by lobbyists and moneyed interests, and really do not represent the citizens of the UK. It's really the quintessential delusion of representative democracy is that your MP represents your beliefs, your opinions, your choices in the Houses of Parliament.
Mm. Now, you mentioned just a moment ago about wanting to obviously have referendums on particular issues, whether that be the decriminalisation of cannabis, legalisation of euthanasia, etc. And it's clear, obviously, from speaking to you and looking at the website, that certainly the approach has been influenced by some of the thinkers that are on the left. But of course, a situation in which you would have referendums like that would obviously be utilised by people who are politically to the right of you and your group. I mean, how would you react if we were in a referendum situation and there was a referendum on, say, the death penalty, which is, of course, one that is continually brought up if we were to have another referendum? I mean, would you be at all worried that a system like the one that you're advocating for could be misused by a particular group to not progress Britain in a way that perhaps you and other members of your organisation would agree with, but in fact push Britain back into a different direction?
Of course, I understand that point, and our website tries to address those kind of questions. There is a long road ahead of us on this issue, mm-hmm. because what we suffer from in this country is a massive democratic deficit. So one of the things that we believe would be required first in order to establish a positive model of direct democracy is for there to be a written codified constitution. Mm-hmm. So Britain is one of the UK is one of the few countries on earth without a written codified constitution. We've operated for centuries on what some people describe as the good chap theory of politics. Mm. And I'm afraid that in our age of crises and collapse, that no longer works. The most vivid illustration of that was the 2019 illegal prorogation of Parliament. Mm. So the initial establishment of a codified written constitution would enshrine in unchangeable law crucial points of human rights, such as there being no capital punishment in the state. So, as I say, there's a long road ahead to perfecting direct democracy, but one of the crucial steps on the way would be a codified written constitution that would permanently outlaw such crucial matters of life and death, such as capital punishment.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm also interested in is obviously a great deal of what we've been discussing has been related to Westminster politics and obviously members of parliament in Westminster. But I mean, how do you think the change that you're advocating for would impact more local levels of democratic representation? So, for example, councils, whether they be parish, borough or metropolitan, elected mayors. I mean, what would happen to them in a change to the system that you're advocating for? Would they be done away with as such, or would they be found some role in a changed system?
Sure. That's a great question. So in our current political situation, forms of direct democracy are likely to gain a foothold first at the local level. And there is a wonderful, clear example of this in a movement that's called Flat Pack Democracy. Mm-hmm. In the last few years, the members of Flat Pack Democracy were able to achieve control of their local council. It's a town called Frome in Somerset. So these were just ordinary citizens of the people of Frome who were fed up with their local party politics, who they saw as unable to respond to the needs and the demands of local citizens, as their hands were tied by the party politics of the national level. Peter McFadyen, who is the originator of Flat Pack Democracy, he decided to do something about that. And slowly but surely, in the last 10 years, Peter and his followers have gained control of Frome County Council, and they are responding to the local citizens' needs with an approach that is akin to direct democracy. They're not beholden to the whims of how party politics are playing out at the national level, and they've proven to be exceedingly popular with their local residents, as they are as they continue to prove that a party politics free or a post ideological platform outside of party politics is responding to the needs of the local citizens better than any of the previous parties were.
In terms of the sort of like the popularity of the idea that obviously you're advocating for, I mean, how popular do you think that they would be with the general public? I mean, what kind of reaction have you already got from members of the public to what you've been doing at Direct Democracy?
When I started Direct Democracy UK in 2020, I was amazed to find that there were a few contemporaries. There is an organisation called PA, that's the People's Administration, and there's an organization called Enact, and all three of us are advocating for various models of direct democracy UK. There's obviously quite a strong following online for the people who the people around the world who are interested in how technology could positively influence politics. So we are a small but growing movement. Obviously, I can attest to that firsthand in only really operating for 2 years. So yeah, we are the citizens of the UK, like many democracies around the world. We live in a complicated society and media environment where consent is manufactured, really. The current political situation of rival party politics is really denigrated to the level of rival teams, and equates to a business model for the media and the press, which enables them to sell more papers. So while unfortunately the vast majority of citizens are caught up in things like manufactured culture wars, while real power exists elsewhere and is managed by, you know, vested interests, the establishment, political elites. So we exist to educate and enlighten people that there is an alternative to representative democracy. It is direct democracy. We can get there slowly and gradually and respectfully, but as we state on our website, our true goal in the long run is to simply replace MPs with the true wills of the people.
Now, you mentioned obviously technology there, and that's something that obviously plays a great part in democracy at the moment. But of course, technology has also been used by certain groups. I'm thinking particularly in the United States with the Republican Party to undermine democracy, suggesting that the Dominion voting machines, which were used in the 2020 presidential election, would somehow have been hacked. Obviously, that's complete rubbish, but it's something that a lot of people in the United States believe. I mean, how do we tackle the ways in which particular political parties or particular individuals attempt to use technology against the democratic system and in some ways attempt to undermine the usage of technology in democracy?
Yes, so obviously technology is just a tool. It can be used for good or ill. On the specific point of the controversy in the US over the Dominion voting machines, unfortunately, I think that's been proven to be nonsense associated with the QAnon movement. But worryingly, the Republican Party have seen fit to fall into these lies and conspiracies, unfortunately. The Republican Party has established the political tools to achieve minority rule, the gerrymandering of districts, the control of local administrations, the county election boards, the certification of votes for the Electoral College. Enough of these political positions are now held by Trump loyalists who believe that the only free and fair elections are the ones that they win. I think in 10 years' time, US democracy will be about as free and fair as Russia's, And that has terrifying consequences for a stable international order. I think that the polarization in the US is a consequence of unrepresentative democracy. The Senate has been completely captured by moneyed interests. It costs millions to effectively run for the Senate. And we've seen so far in the Biden administration how beholden certain representatives are to their corporate benefactors, even when just trying to achieve something as everyday as an infrastructure bill. So yes, the US is in a bad state at the moment, and the future looks quite uncertain. And I fear the same for this country as well. And it all comes back to the need for more democracy, not less. The insurrection at the US Capitol on January 6th and the ongoing polarization and arguments over Brexit in this country, they're all really, I see that they all really stem from the undemocratic nature of the current systems. Mm. The Brexit referendum in particular, it was the unsealing of a valve. It was the popping of a cork. There was so much pent up desire for more control and accountability and just freedom of choice and autonomy that people wanted in their day-to-day lives. There's various arguments on both sides about whether people really knew what they were voting for, and obviously people are now starting to use hindsight by way of proving that. But it just comes back to the fact that people have so much control over their lives in most other areas, except when it comes to politics and lawmaking. And that just leads to frustration and resentment, like the violent outbursts in America, and increasingly the high temperature situations we're seeing outside and inside the Houses of Parliament.
Mm. You mentioned Russia a moment ago, and of course, as we're speaking now, there has been a Russian invasion of Ukraine. At the moment, there seems to be reports of Russian forces attempting to gain control of the Ukrainian capital. Now, I mean, obviously, this is a terrifying moment, both for those who are living in Ukraine and for people around the world. What do you think this invasion says about the state of world politics, and in particular, Russia's attitude to the West of the world?
Sure. So I'm no foreign policy expert, so I'll focus on the issues related to democracy. Mm-hmm. So the thoughts and prayers to the Ukrainian people won't really cut it anymore now. We need massive, tangible acts of solidarity and sympathy. Over 100 Ukrainians have died in the first few days of conflict, and the footage and the pictures coming out in the press are horrendous. But unfortunately, this is symptomatic of the age of collapse we are now in. I think it's important to note that there are protests in Russia right now against the invasion, and we must support these protests as best we can. I can't believe that Putin enjoys the support of a majority of Russian people now. They put up with him like one would a dictator. They try their best to go about their daily lives in a country in which democracy is a sham and corruption is endemic. I'm a student of Peter Pomerantsev. His book, Nothing Is True and Everything Is Possible, is the most readable guide to what has happened in Putin's Russia. The bewildering kaleidoscope of culture and politics created by Vladislav Surkov is one of the tools that's kept Putin in power for so long. But crucially, that managed democracy is spreading west. We're seeing that in the things we've already talked about in the US. And we're seeing that in the UK as well. There's gerrymandering of districts in the UK. There's manufactured culture wars. There's as enemies of the people, as the press would put it. And we have a prime minister in Boris Johnson who has recently become the first in history to be questioned under caution. So the illiberalism and the age of impunity only really continues to grow. And yeah, it's terrifying for world peace.
Well, we're coming towards the end of the podcast, Adam. It's been great to have you on, and I have one final question. Now, of course, in this podcast, we've been discussing Direct Democracy UK and the democratic system in the UK as well as in other countries. But if you could make one change to the society in the UK, to British society, that wasn't directly related to democracy, what change do you think you would make?
That is a very hard question, because how is everything not related to politics and democracy? I would come back to a codified and written constitution. I think that this country can no longer continue with the good chap theory of politics. There's been recent examples around the world where writing a constitution has really helped to bring the country together. In Iceland, following economic collapse in 2008, the crowdsourcing of a written constitution began with people sitting down to talk about their basic values that they shared with their neighbours. So by and large, the drafting of the Icelandic constitution was not done by constitutional law experts. It was done by members of the public. They were selected by ballot, so it included farmers, truck drivers, pastors, filmmakers, students, and a director of a local art museum. The conversations took place in town halls and on social media, the resulting Icelandic Constitution Council opted to change so many things about the country in a positive way, not least in the crucial protection of the endangered Icelandic environment.
Well, I think that that's a great answer to the question, Adam, and I'm sure that there will be many people listening who will agree with that answer. Thank you once again for coming on to the podcast. If people want to find out more about you and about Direct Democracy UK, where should they go to find out more about you and Direct Democracy UK?
Our website is directdemocracyuk.org. And of course, we are on Twitter. You can follow us at directdemosuk, at directdemosuk.
Fantastic. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Debated Podcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.